The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to the program. 4 minutes past nine on this Monday, the 31st of August. All right, Lee, you can leave now. This Monday, the 31st of August. I hope you had a fantastic weekend. It's great to have you on. It's great to have you on board for another show, another week. And we've got lots coming up on the program today. A great variety of content for you. Now, people contact us all the time if they've got topics they wish to raise, issues perhaps that we need to support you on. Our lines are open for you right now. 086 60 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 074 91 25000. Or you can email the show too, by the way, comments@highlandradio.com. And feel free to watch the show if you wish, if it suits you. We're on the X platform, just search Highland Radio. We're on YouTube at Highland Radio Ireland. So that means if it suits you now, if you're working at home or in the home, the children are back at school, you can put us on your big smart TV or your Fire Stick and watch the show for the next 2 hours. We're not on Facebook because they still have us banned. And this is what AI can do. I'll explain it to you in case you didn't hear. We had a news post about the opening of the crematorium, and it was flagged as being cryptocurrency fraud or something. Nothing to do with, by the way, just to be clear, nothing to do with the business. It just so happens that was the story. And AI flagged it and appealed it. So you're having a laugh, and unsuccessful. So we're off Facebook for 3 weeks. There you go. That's it. But anyway, we'll post the link from YouTube onto the Facebook as well, so you won't miss a thing. Right. Let me see if I can switch these headphones, because the set of headphones here is broken, and I want to see if these ones work. One, two. Yep. Okay, that's a bit better. Right, let's get to the newspapers. We'll start with the Dairy People Donegal News. Ruthless crime bosses are now menacing families to collect €20,000 drug debts. It's been revealed users' parents are being threatened with violent scare tactics to intimidate them into paying the drugs' arrears, which range from €100 to €10,000, but can be double that figure. A well-known addiction rehab clinic has now warned that the gang's threats to collect the money are escalating dangerously. And we had that conversation with them too there quite some time ago, and it's only getting worse. But we don't actually really hear of the cases. And there are, you know, criminal damage of vehicles outside homes, or not exclusively, but it can happen. And we hear about, you know, the burning of a car or the smashing of windows or the slashing of tires. And sometimes it's just local or sometimes it's just random acts of, criminal damage. But sometimes it can be connected with that. There's no doubt about it. I know it can be a very difficult topic to talk about, but we do know it is relatively widespread. Maybe it's something that you've been through and you can give us a bit of an insight, because the more I think we talk about things like that out in the open, the better the chances may be of us making some societal changes so that it stops into the future. So, but if you are one of those families that have been targeted by a drugs gang, for an example, over a debt that you're not personally responsible for, but they've held you responsible for, get in touch with us completely anonymously. You can give us a call on 07491 25000. It would be interesting to hear your story, even if it's only taken down and read out rather than you coming on air. Because I think, you know, if we start putting some stories to the stories, it really might help in getting the message out there. I'll throw it open to you. No pressure. I understand the whole thing is based on intimidation, so speaking out might feel like the wrong thing to do, but I'll leave that up to you. 07491 25000 is the telephone number. 086 60 25000 is the WhatsApp and the text. The stark warning of fatalities in the North's Health and Social Care Trust keeps cutting services to vulnerable people. It's been issued by the NIPSA, NIPSA, lead negotiator for health, Kevin Kelly. This is in the Dairy News. If they keep cutting services, care plans, someone is going to get hurt or die. Fatalities are going to come because of these cuts, he added. On to the national newspapers now. And we were talking about going back to school, and it is great. I think children of all ages, they like a bit of structure in their lives. I, as someone who was a bit of a refuser at times, understand that it's not for everyone. But hopefully the majority have gone out there and have done very well. And fair play, by the way, to all the SNAs, all the teachers, all the bus drivers that are getting our young people to school as well. It takes an awful lot of them to keep the wheels moving. But unfortunately, and I really feel for teachers and class assistants and SNAs in this regard, the classes are very, very big in some cases. So the number of children in supersized classes of 35 or more has increased, despite average sizes in primary schools falling below 22 pupils for the first time this century. The strong downward trend in average class sizes has been driven by both a decline in birth rates and an increase in teaching staff. According to new figures published by the Department of Education, the number of children enrolled in mainstream classes fell by 8,380 in 2025-26 to 20,482, an annual decrease of 1.6%. 520,000. That makes it the decrease of 1.6%. The drop has resulted in the average number of pupils in classes in primary schools reaching 21.9, down from 22.2 in the previous school year. But there are a number of pupils. There are a number of pupils who are in classes of 30 or more. And guess which county is right up there at the very, very top? Yes, you've guessed it. It is County Donegal. Now, Leitrim is a peculiar one because I think this is to do perhaps more with the amount of schools and demographics and what have you. It's a low population as well. 22.9% of students there are in classes of 30 or more. In Donegal, it's 13.2%. And bar the shouting, that is the second highest in the country. There's one other county ahead of us. But in Donegal, there's a particular problem. Hopefully we might get a chat with John Boyle of the INTO actually to tease that out as to what the situation is and what the consequences are. I can't hear you in these headphones. I'll sort that out in a moment though. Caroline, sorry, I'm speaking to there. So we don't know what the consequences of that might be. And it can be quite... I know of one particular case, let me just say it like that, where, you know, you'd have been of the view that your child was going into a class of baby infants and senior infants. You know, the school is too... pupils short, they lose a teacher, and next thing you know, your child's in baby infants, senior infants, first and second class, which is a lot to ask of a teacher, isn't it? To try and have appropriate teaching for all of those different age groups. Well, there you go. Less than a third of home care packages are being directly provided by the health service, executive figures show, with more than 5,300 people waiting for support in their homes or extra care hours. This is in the Irish Times today. With demand for home care increasing, so the proportion of older people in the population grows, or as it grows, an opposition TD accused the government of creating a situation in which nursing homes are viewed as the viable option or the default option. The HSE figures show that as of June, 5,539 people were waiting for home care, up 12% compared with the same period last year. Of those, 2,143 were new service users, 3,396 were already in receipt of home support but waiting an additional on additional hours. The two HSE regions account for almost half of the national waiting list. I'm going to surprise you again. Guess which one of those is. The West and Northwest region, covering Donegal, Leitrim, Sligo, West Cavan, Mayo, Galway and Roscommon, had the highest waiting list, 1,266 people, representing 23% of the total. Now, I would love maybe someone in health to give me a bit of an insight into this, because there's two stories here in one story. So the papers say more than two-thirds of home care packages are outsourced to third parties, and that's the headline, as if it's a bad thing. But my understanding is down in Dublin or that area, for an example, you can have a very short wait because they can outsource it straight away to other companies. Up here, my understanding is either we prefer to do it in-house or there is not enough third-party providers to cover our needs, or the budgets aren't there. I mean, there was a time where the budget last year had ran out quite early in the year. So maybe there's someone in health can give me an insight into it. Like, to be honest with you, personally, it might not be good value for money, but if it's third-party care packages and people are getting their care, okay, well, that's what's working on the East Coast. Maybe it should work better up here. So what's going on? Is it A lack of third-party providers here? Is it a policy of the Western and Northwestern region not to employ third parties and do it in-house, or has the money run out? What's the situation? Why do we, in this part of the world, represent such a large percentage of the waiting list nationally? As I say, we'll try and find that out ourselves, but maybe there's someone listening there, and I'm sure there is, that has a greater insight, because it's a... As I say, the paper's framing, I think it looks like it's framing third-party care as a bad thing or a notable thing, but I think if we could get more of that up here, we'd have people waiting a less amount of time, and surely that would be a good thing, no? On to the Irish Daily Mail now, and calls for a total ban on sunbeds in Ireland are growing, and it is understood the government will come to a decision on the matter when the Dáil returns after the summer break. What's your views in relation to this? I think really we've got two groups of people, or three groups really. I think we've got those that are fans of sunbeds, and they for the most part are adults, and they want to take a risk. That's what they want to do. Obviously, then we've got the sunbed business owners who have a vested interest in this. And then there's the rest of the population who perhaps are nonplussed, and when they hear of the increase in risk by the use of a sunbed, they'd go, well, of course, ban that. You know, so I don't know how all that's going to settle. But the Coalition recently published the Sunbeds Public Consultation Report as part of its commitment to explore ways to finally ban commercial sunbed use. The report sets out views received from health workers, members of the public, NGOs and other stakeholders. The public consultation launched in the summer of last year received over 9,000 responses from Irish residents. The newly formed Coalition Against Sunbeds has called for a total ban on sunbeds, which it points out directly causes 5% of all melanoma skin cancers in Ireland. The group says that banning sunbeds would help to save lives by decreasing risk factors for melanoma, and also save the health service an estimated €9.7 million per year in costly cancer treatments. So, I mean, that is a convincing argument, isn't it? 5% of cancers, specific cancers caused by sunbed use, the cost to the state almost €10 million. Or is it nannying? Those same people might say, well, stuff you, I'm going to go out and rub baby oil all over myself and lie out in the sun all summer. In the sun all summer, because, you know, that's effectively a natural sunbed, though it's obviously sunbeds are much more dangerous in different ways. I don't know. What do you think? As I say, I think it's going to fall down to the three groups, those that use them, those that run them, and the rest who see that figure and go, well, of course they shouldn't be. Of course they shouldn't be allowed. The Irish Daily Mirror this morning: police investigating a suspected murder have urged the public not to speculate about the incident. A suspect has been arrested on suspicion of murder and attempted murder after the victim's body was discovered beside a seriously injured young girl at a property in Dungannon, County Tyrone, on Saturday. In a statement, the police said there is no ongoing threat to the public. The wounded child remains in a critical condition at the Children's Hospital in Belfast following the incident on the Lissenhull Road. A woman who was also in the house on the same road suffered non-life-threatening injuries and has been discharged from hospital. Detective Chief Inspector Robinson, the PSNI's major investigation team, said the body of a man was discovered inside a home on that road at around 11 a.m. on Sunday. And they're saying they have info. They're not releasing it. Don't speculate. I think some people, you do see that quite a bit, and it actually does spark speculation. I think really what they should try and do is find a way to release as much information that doesn't affect the investigation, but actually then stops any speculation. Because now I'm curious as to what people might be speculating about, and I think that's kind of counterintuitive. And we talk about how difficult it is to become a homeowner in this day and age. And a solo first-time buyer, so that's in other words, if you just want to live on your own, you don't want to buy a house with anyone, a solo first-time buyer needs up to €108,000 annually to buy a home in County Dublin. You also need a salary of €101,000 in Wicklow and €100,000 in Kildare. In Donegal, the figure is €57,000. So if you're on your own, you'd need to be earning at least €57,000 before you... And I presume you'd also, and it doesn't say in the article, I presume at that time you'd also have had to accumulate a deposit as well. So, I don't know. There was another report last week, wasn't there, that suggested that, a large majority of young people now don't think they'll ever own their own home. A lot of stuff happened over the weekend, which we'll be catching up on over the course of this show, including a deeply concerning fish kill in the Crannagh River. Let's go to Kieran Fitzgerald for Secretary of Buncrana Anglers Association. Good morning, Kieran.
Morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm all right. It was some of your members that discovered this fish kill. Talk to me about what they came across.
Well, we've over 60 juveniles in our club, probably the most in the Northwest. And the last week of the summer holidays, a group of children went down to go fishing on the Crannagh River. And when they went down to the river, there were dead fish and dying fish along a stretch below the Irish water treatment plant. And, it's a devastating scene. We're livid because it's not the first time this has happened. It's not the first time it's happened in the area. Our spawning area on the Crannagh River was basically wiped out.
Just to focus on that for a second, Kieran, because, it's terrible that this happened, but fish reproduce and you can sort of come back from that. But when the spawning cycle is broken or when the spawning area, because these are often returning fish, depending on the type of fish they are, but when that starts getting interfered with the very future of the fish population in that river starts coming into serious question, am I correct?
You're absolutely correct. And we're hanging by a thread. Wild salmon and other migratory fish and native trout and everything else are hanging by a thread on a lot of Irish rivers, but particularly the Crannagh. And the reason is, well, one of the main reasons on the Crannagh is we've had repeated, pollution events that have, damaged and killed our fish. And I want those children to be able to take their children down to go fishing, in 10, 20, 30 years' time. And it's an existential crisis. We're looking at the survival of the species, at the moment.
Yeah, when you hear of juvenile salmon and brown trout as well, but particularly the salmon, as you say, they're migratory. They come up the river, they spawn, then they head out and come back and all that type of stuff. I've seen it myself in a river where they decided to do a little bit of irrigation work and interfered with the spawning grounds, and that was it. It was finished. It never, ever recovered. This is a different threat.
The rivers are very sensitive. The rivers are very sensitive. Now, I will say I have to thank Inland Fisheries Ireland. They were on scene within 4 minutes after I rang them.
Right.
They've taken samples. They've sent them away for analysis. They're following, a direct line of inquiry on this, and we want, I want to see this in court. I want litigation. I don't want to hear lessons learned, and I don't want to hear, we're very sorry, it'll never happen again. I want serious fines and heads to roll over this, because it has a devastating effect on the whole ecosystem.
Okay, Kieran, thanks very much for that. And what we should factor in as well is the young anglers seeing that. It's not very pleasant for them at all. We're talking as sort of grown-ups with a bit of life experience. They've actually just landed on that, and it must have, it's very upsetting for them, I'd imagine, because
absolutely
there's a respect to the animals. It's a respect to the fish that's built into angling as well, as ironic it might be to non-anglers to hear that. But, catch and release and, no abuse of the fish until you put it back into the water. ETC, so to see fish in that state, not easy for them. All right, Kieran, thank you. Kieran Fitzgerald, Secretary of Buncrana Anglers Association. Local councillor Jack Murray has been listening, but has also, of course, been on this story himself over the weekend. The Inland Fisheries Ireland said the incident occurred on the Crana River, 5 kilometres upstream of Buncrana. Fish mortalities were observed over a half-kilometre stretch of the river. Species of fish discovered, as I mentioned, included juvenile salmon, brown trout. They're working in conjunction with government agencies to investigate the incident. What do you know? What have you got to say about this?
Yeah, look, first of all, you can feel in Kieran's voice just how devastated the angling community in Buncrana are about this incident. And I would commend Kieran and all the anglers who responded so quickly. Look, they serve, for want of a better word, as custodians of the Crana River. They do a huge amount of work. As you can see, they're taking children there to promote it and as an ancient pastime, but also as environmentalists to protect the river for generations to come. The incident happened around 5 o'clock. I think I was checking my phone there, but 17 minutes past, the anglers had been contacting me. I immediately contacted Inland Fisheries Ireland and was informed that they were already on the ground. So I think while it's a very, very concerning and bad news story that such an environmental incident had happened, there is something positive to take from it in the swift action, both from the local community and the anglers, ourselves as local representatives, Inland Fisheries Ireland. And then on Saturday morning, I got a call from Mishka Aaron, who are also being proactive. And look, I'd be one of the most vocal critics of Mishka Aaron on your show, but on this one, I do have to say that they acted very swiftly because, of course, it was concerned that it happened so close to the treatment plant. I suppose your instinct would say that it must have came from there. They're adamant that it wasn't. They're taking samples as well as the AFI. So look, we'll see the results of this. We don't know what has happened as of yet, but the most important thing is that we find out, we get to the bottom of it and ensure that this never happens again, because as Kieran has rightly said, we need to protect the Crana River.
Yeah, but how are we going to find out? Because I presume there were investigations when there was a fish kill earlier this year, and I presume there was investigations when there were fish kills in previous years, unless it's not coming from the same source, what faith can we have in the investigation actually making sure this doesn't happen again?
First of all, we have to find out what happened. So at this moment,
yes, but
time,
my point is, in terms of the previous fish kills, and I'm not asking you to give me an answer, that would be unfair, but if we had any answers from the previous fish kills in the Crana River, because if we haven't, it's very hard to have faith in this investigation.
Yeah, look, that's an understandable point of view. Like, it's frustrating when it happens, when something continues to happen and repeatedly happens. I share that frustration, but we still have to work and do everything we can with all the relevant authorities to make sure do everything we can to ensure it doesn't happen. So I know that the AFI and this Gary are taking samples separately. They say they're following a different line of inquiry, as Kieran has said. I know that there was drone footage was taken in over the weekend to scan the river to see if there's any kind of outfall or anything that ran onto the river.
Just in relation to that, out of interest, because there hasn't been an investigation and an Irish Water say they'll be part of that, right? Did you ask how, prior to an investigation, they could be so confident that plant wasn't responsible for it? Because it's it's a very early stage to be able to rule yourself out. I'm not blaming Irish Water. I'm just curious as to how they were so confidently able to rule themselves out of the equation to you.
Well, they can measure that there was no outfall, or there was no spillage or leakage from their treatment plant into the river. They ruled that out. But what they'd said is that they look forward to seeing the results, and they feel that they'll be very confident that it wasn't them. Now, look, it might very well turn out to be them, but I can only say...
it's a pretty strong argument. They can monitor that stuff and they'd say... I mean, do we have an issue with it like we have in other parts of the county? And I'm not sure if it would do enough damage to cause a kill like this. You know, we've seen, you know, farming tanks being washed out in rivers in the past. Or is there anything else on that river that might discharge into the water business wise? Or is there any local knowledge that we're obviously not going to name anyone, Jack, but any activity that would point to this, why this is happening time and time again?
Well, there's very little business activity. It's a very rural area, so there's a lot of agriculture. But again, look, I'm not going to point any fingers because I don't have enough information to speculate, and I don't want to come back and have to apologise to anybody for making a false accusation. So, look, I'm just going to allow the authorities, the relevant authorities and the experts in this field to follow their line of inquiry. They seem fairly confident that they know what it is. But over the airwaves today, I'm not going to... point a finger at anybody. I think we will find out in due course, and I'll take it.
Well, just in relation to that, because there is a public interest in this, and obviously, are you saying the investigators have a definite line of inquiry?
Yeah, they've said that. Yeah,
and is it individual, corporation, business?
They haven't relayed that to me. Just the words are a definite line of inquiry.
Wow, and that's peculiar.
As I say, I'll be reluctant to speculate.
I know, but just in this day and age, as if like we know something we're not telling you. And I mean, I know they're not going to give a specific name of a company or an individual or an entity, but you know, give us something for crying out loud. Okay, yeah.
I would say it's a matter of days before we know much more.
Yeah, okay.
It's not going to be too hard to find out. It's a small area. There's not much that could have ran into it. And look, they'll have samples that'll say exactly what was in the water and what killed these fish, so we will know fairly soon.
Yeah, true enough. Okay, again, no river can keep taking these hits. They really just can't. Okay, listen, thanks very much for your time, Jack. That's
thank you,
Councillor Jack Murray there. Look after yourself. Any views in relation to that, of course, you know the numbers, 0860 25,000. Our next guest is John Ball, the General Secretary of the Irish National Teachers Organisation. John, thanks for chatting to us. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Good, good, good. And I suppose before we highlight what we need to highlight, a big day for everyone, isn't it? Lots of fresh faces, some not so fresh, and I'm not just talking about the students. Back in school today, huge numbers. I'm thinking on the teachers, the SNAs, classroom assistants, all the bus drivers got the school children there. To start off with, it's a big day for everyone today, and I know there's been some schools that have sort of had soft launches last week or what have you, but it's all go today.
All go today, Greg. In fact, you know, traditionally it used to be the 1st of September when schools would reopen. But nowadays it tends to be more the week during which the first falls. So you're right, there's about 650,000 between the staff and the students going back into primary for their first full week of the school year. And I'm sure they're very excited, particularly the junior infants. And, you know, another group that tend to get very excited this time of the year are the sixth class pupils, because they know it's their last year. And you often find that those are the kids who help the young ones coming into the school, help their teachers to help the infants to settle in. So great day for all the families, and looking forward to a long school year. You know, we have the longest school year in the developed world with 910 hours of teaching time. And hopefully the students will benefit from that, because, you know, we have a very strong track record in Irish primary education and special education of achieving very highly in PISA scores. Last year's results are due out next week, so looking forward to that too. But yeah,
and that success and that record is often despite the odds, because we do have teachers who are having to deal with more students at any one time than they should have to. And students in classes where perhaps, with the best will in the world, they're not getting the test, the attention that they potentially should, because we're talking at having one of the highest percentages in Ireland of classes over 30. I mean, that's 30 people in the one classroom, you know, with one teacher and assistant or whatever it might be. That's hard work in any society, that.
Well, I suppose the other thing that's happened the last few years, Greg, is that on this day, the Irish Independent has done a deep dive into the size of classes throughout the country, and they've done granular stats this morning with regards to every county. But it's particularly worrying and an awful indictment of the government that Donegal is the rural county with the most number of children in these supersized classes. The county has about 80 of these classes with 30 children or more inside them. That's 2,434 children. And when you look at the counties other than Donegal that are suffering, they tend to be counties where there's a city, whether it's Limerick or Cork or Galway or obviously the Dublin urban sprawl. But really worrying that these stats are so high for County Donegal. And on top of that, we know that in the last couple of weeks, we've heard of another school closure in Donegal. So at that end of the scale, government's failure to reduce the staffing schedule is also impacting really badly in rural Ireland, with Aidan Infa, Fintra, Duhurry and Kilkenny schools closing this year. So I'd say that the parents in Donegal are very, very concerned about this, and probably very unhappy that the government has worsened the situation in the last year. I didn't anticipate this. Now, I have to say to you, I've spoken to you about this a lot of times, that the number of children in these classes over the European average would actually go up to 428,941 in Ireland. They've gone up a lot in the last year. But then when you think about it, when government didn't take action in last year's budget, it was nearly inevitable that the situation was going to worsen. And we're going to have to demand that they do it this year, because we'll be here next year, Greg, otherwise talking about way more schools closing in County Donegal and far larger classes. And that's not acceptable in a country that has quite a lot of budget surplus at the moment.
I would suspect that, you know, people in government might say, well, we're looking at the birth rate. If we let, you know, this cohort pass through and we retain the same number of teachers, that this will settle itself, this will all sort itself out in a generation.
And you see, the government, in a sense, they would be right if they took that approach, that if they said, well, look, at the pupil numbers are dropping. For example, in the last year, they went down another 6,200 odd. So as they continue to drop year on year, if we keep the number of teachers in the that are in classes at the moment, the class size is going to come down automatically. And that is true, and we accept it. We agree with that position. But the problem is that the government is not keeping the class teachers. In the last, since August of 2024, they've stripped out about 1,000 class teachers. This summer's the worst of all. They've openly admitted in a report.
I'll give an example of that, if you don't mind. And I hope I'm not speaking out of turn, but our son's just started school. And he was going into school in a class of baby infants and senior infants.
Yes.
Now, because the school was two pupils short, they lost a teacher. So
that's
now
right.
He's going in to 4 years of being taught in baby infants, high infants, first and second. Now, that's
correct.
A completely different teaching and learning experience as to where we were at a month ago. And it was only just in the mouth of school opening that the school was being told they were losing a teacher over two pupils.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no nuance there, is there?
No, there isn't, Greg. But you see, there was no need for that school to lose that teacher if government had done what we asked them in last year's budget, because the retention figure for that teacher would have reduced by two or three children, and then they wouldn't have lost the teacher. And that school where your poor child is going into this multi-class situation now is one of 498 schools where the government stripped out a teacher in the last year. Now, they could have avoided that simply by reducing class size in last year's budget. I begged Minister McEntee at the time to take action, because we could foresee what was going to happen. And you know what, Greg? In the last 60 years, there's been a lot of Fine Gael ministers for education, and only two of them reduced the class size for a four-teacher school. Only two of them in 60 years, Joe McHugh and Richard Bruton. The rest of them, even though class size has gone down a lot in 60 years, I have to admit, for a four-teacher school, the only two who did it were those two ministers. And Minister Nocton is following along in a tradition within our party that they have no interest in small schools in rural Ireland.
But the truth, though, you see, this is the thing. You've just hit on it, rural Ireland. You mentioned cities. You know, Dublin and surrounding, 4.3%, 8.7%, 4.2%, 3.6%, 7.5%, 6%. That is where government sits. That's the East Coast. Those are the counties around Dublin. That's where the votes are at. Donegal, Sligo, Mayo, Galway, you know, there you go in the West Coast. All of a sudden, where it really perhaps doesn't matter come election time, that's where the numbers are higher. You know, so they will probably, and they look at the overall state average of 7.5%, and they'll say to you, John, we've hit down to 7.5%, or we're holding at 7.5%. We're doing a great job. Stuff Donegal that's twice that.
But you see, if you think about it, Greg, see that 7.5% you're talking about? That's 7.5% of the children in Ireland in classes of 30 or more.
Oh, it's nothing to be proud of. It's
Now, it's 35 years since the 1990, 36 years since the government put out a circular to schools banning schools from having more than 25 children, suggesting that it was going to impede children's learning. 36 years ago, this statement was made by government in the department circular. And here we are. The successive governments have been, presiding over this debacle. And you know what you say about other parts of the country where the votes are? The sad part of this is, I'm here speaking to you about Donegal. This is a national problem.
There's
nearly 430,000 children in classes above the EU. If Croatia and Latvia and these countries with far less resources than ours can be down at 15, surely to God we can keep our own government commitment to get down to 19. And the INTO is not even asking for this in 1 year, Greg. We're only asking them to do it over 4 years.
I'm looking at the counties that seem to have got, and I don't, by the way, I'm not prefacing this. I want to preface this. I'm not saying this is a bad thing. But if I look at the counties with the highest rates, it's the counties that have taken the greatest burden of people fleeing Ukraine, for an example, or other countries. And a lot of those are going to be young without additional resources. Is that a factor in this? In other words, that we'd had an artificial rapid population growth in Donegal without potentially an increase in schools, in fact, a reduction in schools, or without an increase in teachers, i.e. should it be factored in that counties like Donegal that have been called upon to do more than other counties in terms of housing families from outside the country, that they should have got special attention in supply school supply? And I understand you represent the country and you might not want to go county by county breakdown, John.
I know, I do. Indeed, I do.
Do you? Right. I'm trying to put forward that argument then. What do you think about it?
Yeah, so I don't necessarily agree with that particular premise, Greg, but I'll give you the reasons why. And then in another sense, I do agree that special measures are needed for counties like Donegal. So when it came to the huge influx of Ukrainian children and IPAS children, indeed, Donegal has taken its fair share of children from international, fleeing international wars particularly. And at that time, we negotiated with the Department of Education that there would be additional SNA and teaching posts, particularly for children with additional needs and children who didn't have English as a first language. And we got all of those. But the other big thing we noticed in County Donegal was, for example, the school that closed sadly this summer after over 100 years, Duhurry. They were kept alive because they had children from Ukraine in that school for a number of years. Then those children were moved and there weren't enough children locally to retain the school. But the reason I would suggest here that there should be special measures for County Donegal is your own child's story. Because the vast majority of classes in County Donegal, outside of Buncrannan, Letterkenny and Donegal Town, they would be multi-classes, where you don't just have the one age group in the one classroom. You have at least the junior and senior infants, and then oftentimes you might have four classes in the one classroom. And in a modern curriculum that we're having rolled out from this September, it just isn't feasible with the number of children with additional needs now in those multi-classes. It's not feasible to deliver the curriculum the way that it needs to be delivered with supersized classes. So in a county like that and all the rural counties, certainly there should be special measures to make sure that the class sizes, and the only way to do it is in the budget coming up now in 4 weeks' time, and I'm appealing to the parents of Donegal who got this terrible headline this morning, to get onto their local TDs and their senators and to say to those, this is not acceptable any longer. We need a budgetary measure around this. And what the INTO is looking for is only 20 million euros. It's the lowest ask we've had in any budget campaign for years.
Yes, it's about organisation too, though, because the government did have to reverse on stripping SNAs out of schools because there was such a backlash. And yet we've got schools losing teachers left, right and centre over one, two, three pupils. And it's changing the education life of hundreds, tens of thousands of students in the stroke of a pen.
It is. And, you know, there's a false narrative around now, Greg, that the reason the government had to roll back on those is because there was an overspending government and they had to get a bailout from Minister Chambers. You know, this is the same minister who left that department short over 600 million deliberately in last year's budget, knowing well that there was going to be this demand for children with additional needs to get extra support. So what we're looking for is only 20 million extra in the next budget. And when you think about about that. It's not even 0.5% of an increase in education budget. Okay. Now, everything has gone up in price, so surely government can spare the children of Ireland from these supersized classes by doing what we're asking. And they won't do it because I'm on the radio. We need parents all over Donegal to get onto their TDs and to demand that this happens in October.
But maybe some of those TDs are listening to you on the radio and might decide to raise it in the Dáil. It all helps. John Boyle, thank you very much indeed. He is General Secretary of the INTO. Brendan Devaney is the presenter of Highland Radio's DL Debate podcast, and it's live for you after 7 o'clock this evening. Good to see you, Brendan. You're looking fresh, son.
Good to see you, Greg. Listen, thanks for highlighting as ever. You're not a bad lad.
Huh? Good stuff. Listen, it's all part. You have to give me something, though, right? You have
to. Oh, yes, yes.
That's
payback.
How it works.
Sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, yeah, two way.
Ryan Ferry from the Donegal News is going to join you to look over the club championships so far. Kilcar, they're continuing their charge. They're in great bullet form. Beating Full Masters, a great result.
Three from three, Greg. There's, yeah, that was a rearranged game, but of course, after the tragedy, and they move on to the maximum points along with Dunloe and Glen Swilly. So, yeah, great start to the season for them, Greg, and that's the people, the top four, want to avoid that pre-quarter-final clash, so you get a week off. So that's what everybody's looking to do, get into those top spots.
Yeah, and there's a lot for you to go through. In fact, we can't go through the games here now because it would be unfair. I just want to mention that as a sort of a standout game because a lot of football, a lot of hurling played over the weekend.
Yeah, certainly. The two big ones was the semi-final. St. Junan's coming through against Burt in a real top-class game, and Setanta having too much for Sean McCool. So that's setting up a final now a few weeks' time. They've pushed back the hurling as well, Greg. What was happening the last few years was they were putting the hurling in at a certain time frame to not to clash with football, but then they were weeks and weeks, maybe 6 weeks on out from their Ulster Championship games in. So they've rejigged that a bit. So the final set now for the 19th and 20th, just so there's not that big layoff from competitive action heading into Ulster.
Yeah, so Ryan's going to help you out with the football. You've got Niall Cleary, the Setanta hurling manager, Derry coach, on the show as well to run through that action. And a bit of an insight with Johnny McCafferty, the Termon ladies manager.
Yeah, it's good lad, Johnny. Listen, first year in, they've had a cracking start this season, one in the Gaeltacht and one in the Division 1 titles. So we're a few games into the senior championship now and the ladies there, four games in. There's one to go before we get into the knockout stages. So it'll be interesting just to see how Johnny's enjoying it. And just, as I say, life on the line, just the perspective of management now and the commitments that's across the board there. He's a couple of daughters playing as well, so it'll be great to catch up with him.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a really interesting insight too. I mean, obviously it's great to talk about the action, but, you know, what's life on the line like for a manager of one of the top ladies teams in the county? Brilliant stuff, especially when you've got the family factor in there. Right, there's that and so much more besides. Anything else coming up that we need to flag, by the way? Or I mean, that's enough. That's your hour in the bag, but do you have any ice cream for us? Any bonus stuff?
Yeah, Greg, see, as the day goes on, you never know. You
that's
need something
it.
More from me. I'll find something else for you, my guy.
No, listen,
funny, we were talking about the refs last week and a bit of reaction to the different refereeing thing, different people throwing in their points of view on what else needs to be looked at. So, yeah, as I said, it was interesting talking to the two guys last week. But, yeah, that's where we're at tonight. But concentrating on hurling, a bit of ladies football and, of course, the senior championship. So, again, giving everybody the respect they deserve, Greg.
All right, fantastic stuff. Well done, Brendan, as always. It seemed to have been a really positive GEA draw yesterday. The draw was last night. I got my tickets. I thought, you know what? I'm going to win this. I'm going to win $250,000. And part of me actually thought I was going to, as stupid as I am. I don't normally buy tickets, but I bought tickets for that thing. And who won it? Only someone from Mayo. Fair play, Anne. But it had to go to Mayo again, didn't it? The Mayo footballers had a fantastic weekend on the stage at Electric Picnic with the Sore Doctors. They are All-Ireland champions, and now one of them is a €250,000 richer. It's all about Mayo this year. They had other success as well, of course, on the pitch. By the way, we have a fantastic opportunity for you to win €12,000 this week. Now, this is part of the Highland Radio Super Summer Cash Draw. Lots of you are already in, and we've already given away 8,000 euro, which is fantastic, right? But still, we have a fantastic prize. Even if you haven't got a ticket yet, for a tenner, effectively, it can be from a tenner, you have a chance to win 10,000 euro and 2,000 euro. So eight's gone, that's fine, but the majority is left to go. So you can still be part of the draw, and it is perfectly possible that the ticket to collect 10,000 euro has yet to be sold. We aren't talking 50,000 entries. We're not talking 100,000 entries. This is a much smaller, more local draw. Everyone so far that's won has been from Donegal, actually, as far as I can remember. Because we're a Donegal radio station, we've got fantastic listeners in Derry and Tyrone and around the world. But for events like this, the majority of people that enter are from Donegal. We're not taking Facebook ads to try and get people in Kerry to buy tickets, which is, there's no harm in that. I'm just saying, your odds are really are much less than you might see in other massive draws. So you can get a ticket for a tenner effectively, and you could win 10,000 euro on Friday. There's also 2,000 euro to give away. So Lee Gooch is giving away 2,000 on his show, and then we're going to give away 10,000 on this show. So you can get your tickets. One ticket is 15 euro, but you can get five for 50. So you can get five tickets for 50 euros. That's a tenner a ticket, effectively. And you can do that yourself. Maybe you and your brother wants to group together and get tickets for free by buying five for 50. I will say, personally, we say here as a radio station, of course, only have a bit of fun with your own money. If you can't afford it, don't bother. But there's lots of you there that work really hard and have a bit of discretionary spending and can have a bit of fun with it. And that's what this is all about. The biggest draw is yet to come. Okay, so we've given away a couple of 2,000s, but this now is the biggie. So if you want to be in the draw drum for 10,000 euro plus a 2,000 euro bonus draw, now is the time to get your tickets. You can go onto the website, highlandradio.com, or you can give us a call here at the radio station, 074-91-25,000. 10,000 euro, not to be sniffed at, with a 2,000 euro bonus draw, all to be given away on Friday. Get your tickets now. Call us on 07491 25,000, or if you want to go onto the website, highlandradio.com. And of course, if you're not in, you can e-win. Isn't that what they say? On the issue of schools, years ago when I was in school, there were 42 students, one teacher and no SNAs, and we all turned out great. Did you, though? You know, we all turned out great. You did. I think sometimes we can have rose-coloured glasses on. I got lost in big classes, personally speaking. I probably could have done better in a smaller class, but I got lost in a big class. So I'm not sure when we say we all turned out great that actually tells the full story. So many people left school at 14, 15 and 16 when they were in classes of 42. And I'm sure many of them are listening now. I'm one of them, and I'm sure there's many others. They didn't all. Some of them, if you were really clever, no bother. You can batter on, probably earning 100k a year. But the rest, many of us in classes that big ended up, you know, packing it in early, perhaps. No fault to the teacher, just a difficult teacher environment. We're joined on the programme now by author and teacher and author, Dr. Joe Kelly. Imagine why? On Waltugamai?
Time ago, Mike, or am I going to stay here? Because the luck days checked. I hope all is well with yourself and all listening in Highland Radio.
We're doing good. Right, now, I was taken back a little bit on this one myself, to be honest with you, when I saw some of the lineups for the ALCI conference. What is the ALCI conference, Joe?
Well, it's basically about consultants ensuring that the highest quality of breastfeeding is promoted throughout the country. So it's the consultations, the consultants that are in our hospitals and in our communities that are advising about breastfeeding. So it's the Association of Lactation Consultations of Ireland, the ALCI. And they're having a conference now in October. Where to have a conference in October? In a hotel in Galway, but the family-run hotel have withdrawn it in light of their venue being used in light of one of the speakers that are...
That person is US-based speaker Jacob Engelsman. Yes. Right, so what issue would you take? Well, we'll park the fact that the family-run hotel obviously took an issue. What is the problem with this guest in your view?
Well, basically, he's written a book, Lactation for the Rest of Us, A Guide to Queer and Trans Parents and Helpers. And he wrote the book for men who want to breastfeed. And this includes the curiosity and the sexual gratification that comes from it. He's also talked and given at the conference a number of times, a fetish conference in the US. And, you know, this is deeply shocking that we're exposing innocent children to this kind of ideology. It's about men getting sexual gratification through hormones or whatever to breastfeed children. And it's our taxes. The point that gets me is it's our taxes that is paying for this mad ideology. And this is the ideology, again, I've been talking to you before, that our present government have in their programme for government.
Just in relation to it being an ideology, right, whether you or I or listeners agree or disagree, you can induce lactation in men. There's all, so trans men or whatever it might be, I don't know the ins and outs of it. So that's, whether you like it or not, a medical fact. It's not a ideology as such, is it?
Oh, it is, because the HSE have defended this policy and this invitation to this man based on the government's DEI, Diversity, Inclusivity and Equality policy, which Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, and sadly to say, our Donegal government, Oireachtas members, support fully. I mean, they've remained totally silent on this. And they'll say, well, maybe it's not my personal opinion, but the facts are that they're supporting a government that has imposed this view on us. And look, Greg, it's not just about our taxes being wasted on this breastfeeding for men, which for me personally, I think is very, very offensive to women and to motherhood and to that whole bonding and that whole natural process. But to park that up, this is Irish taxpayers' money that our Oireachtas members in Donegal are sanctioning. Mm.
Can I just put a bit more meat on the bones of what you said? So a fetish is where you get a sexual kick from something out of the ordinary or different. I don't know what the terminology is. So he has spoken at previous fetish events, inducing lactation for kinksters. Okay, so in other words, these are men who get a sexual kick from being able to produce milk. He also talks about and has talked about sexual gratification from breastfeeding, gender euphoria. So this might be a man who identifies as a woman and gets either sexual gratification or a euphoric feeling from it. So that's fact. That's not speculation, by the way. That's not Joe being ultra-Christian or anything, right? And I don't mean that bad, Joe, but I'm just saying this is his factual background, yet he was booked for this. Now, my question to you, Joe, is who's looking for this? Because I strongly suspect people within the LGB and perhaps even the T part of that community are going, we don't need this. This is not good. This makes us look like this, that, or the other. So it'd make you wonder who's booking it and why.
Well, you see, again, it goes back. It's like your problem with your cycle paths in Letterkenny, and I tried to explain that to your listeners.
They're not my problem. I don't live in Letterkenny.
Well,
go on.
I use Letterkenny, and it's our problem. This is the sustainable goals, number 11, sustainable cities. That's why you have your cycle paths, and policy dictates that must happen. So everything else is irrelevant. Policy number 5 is gender equality, and this is not equality for women. This is driven by the UN, accepted by our government, and then forced by our government to us through the HSE and different arms and different NGOs. So, for example, we've seen, and Fianna Fáil is at the lead of this. Emma Foley, who was the Minister for Education, brought in a new sex ed programme when she was minister, anal sex, oral sex. This is all part of attacking our families and attacking our children. They also, for example, have the whole idea of removing the word mother and woman from the constitution. We've talked about that. This is Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael led.
I think you're grouping a lot of stuff in there. I think there's some stuff that it's no harm people knowing about and how you teach it, and we can have that conversation. I think grouping in a speaker who sees breastfeeding as a fetish perhaps is not necessarily, you might group it in with that, other people may not, Joe. They've paused sales, they've paused ticket sales due to the fallout of this controversy. I'm not sure if he's going to speak or not speak. But what I'll say to you is this, Joe, this is the face of some of what you're talking about, some would say. What's happening under the radar, if you know what I mean? What's the soft stuff that's happening? So this has caused controversy because it's actually been, it's public and people see it. If what you're saying is correct, that this is part of an ideology, this is part of meeting certain international criteria, what is happening under the radar that's not, that is, you know what I mean, that people don't know is happening so they can't kick up a stink?
Well, you know, the famous analogy of how do you cook a frog? You put him in cold water, turn on the gas, and by the time the water's warm, the frog's cooked. And this is what's happening to us. They're bringing in these, like, they're trying maybe with this to see how far they can push us. But these soft policies are being brought in to our doors. And what I see, Greg, and the reason I speak up is this government, in particular this government, have brought a war to the families' doors of this county and throughout the country. They've brought a war as a parent to my door. The Oireachtas members in Donegal, through their promotion of DEI, have brought a war into my home. And I'm standing at my door and I'm going to defend it. I am not going to let them or Oireachtas members dictate to me or to my children. I have 3 children in secondary school, 2 children in national school. And the sex ed, for example, led by Norma Foley, this is all part, join up the dots. And sometimes, you see, the fish are sometimes the last to see the water. And sometimes parents, grandparents, nieces and nephews, what they're being taught, we don't necessarily see it. We take it for granted. I'm fortunate because I'm in education. But like, it's all around us. And what I would say to people is stop looking left or right. Just look up and see where this is coming from.
But why are you grouping it in with the broader sex education, right? What else is being taught that you're opposed to?
It's not that I see it as me being opposed to it. It's the values, the
tradition. You're in a war, Joe. You said you're in a war.
I have not caused this war in my family. They have brought the war to our doors. I do not accept that a man can breastfeed. I do not accept that my young children need to be told about ill sex.
Can I just say, firstly, right, we have to think about the children here.
Yeah.
And you know, the adult sensibilities and their feels and the euphoria or whatever, right? You know, only women should breastfeed kids. Is that controversial? I don't know. If it is, take me out and shoot me. I don't think, as unbiased as I try and be in this chair, that I can sit here and say that there is no scenario, in my view as a dad and someone who cares for children, whereby a fella, and I don't care how they live their lives or whatever, should be doing that, because it's crazy. Now, when you talk about other things, anal sex, oral sex, I don't believe being educated about them means it's a bad thing. My wee Hudson's 5 years of age. He knows all the swear words now because in different environments he picks them up. Me and Aisling don't swear, but he picks them up in different environments. He knows all the words, but he knows not to use them. Okay? So it's not like SH1T is going to slip out or Fs or whatever it might be, because he understands the words and he understands the rights and wrongs and when you cannot use them. I think there is an argument at an age-appropriate time, Joe, to say this is what happens in life. And it does. And it does. And it happened before there were schools even. And to say that it's only appropriate if you want it or blah, 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 blah. Do you get where I'm coming from? But I think you start throwing this craziness in with that, you lose me a little bit.
But Greg, you're taking for granted your own moral anchoring of your child. Not everybody has that moral anchoring. And, you know, as I said, I stand at the door of my house to protect my family. You stand likewise. Some children don't have that. Look at the mess that are homeless children. There's 5,571 homeless children in Ireland today. Look at the mess Tusla's in. You know, it's okay for me and you. I can battle and I'm not afraid to battle, and so can you, and point out when our children are right and
my
wrong.
Concern, though, is in your war that there could be collateral damage. That's it. Because I think with the history in our country that there is a strong argument for a age-appropriate education so that someone can't say, oh, well, if we do it this way, such and such, right? So in other words, a vulnerable child or a young girl, 17, 18, or a young boy, 17 or 18, can be told that if we do a certain activity a certain way, oh, but that's not, that's fine, you see, this is not, there's no counter-education to that. So I think you can age appropriately and in a constructive way, educate people about their bodies and their various uses and what's right or wrong. And I think at an age appropriate level, we need to do that, especially given our history of children's innocence being exploited.
And I agree with you totally on that. But again, I'm pointing out that you give a moral anchor to your children and I do, and please God, many people do out there. But that is not always the case.
Yeah, but you've seen what happened when our kids were out of school for COVID, Joe. You've seen what happened, how damaging it was, how we saw an increase in physical violence in the home. We saw an increase in kids not eating and stuff. Do you know what I mean? Like, school is a good place to get your teachings, even especially when there may be that moral compass isn't at home.
Yeah, well, look, it depends what perspective you're coming for, and it depends how it's been taught. And we're assuming that everything is done in bona fide. We assume that the HSE have our best interests in heart. We assume that the TDs in Donegal spend their taxes in a proper way. And yet here they are promoting breastfeeding and men using our taxes. And see, this is what I'm trying to say. This is the softening constantly of our morality and our values. My values may differ from somebody else, but for God's sake, we need to have some basic values. For example, that, you know, put a cow into a field with a bull and see what happens. It doesn't work. This is wrong. This is immoral. And it's a kind of it's a sad reality that our taxes are being wasted on this. And look, Greg, you know, I would love to talk more about how our taxes are being wasted. Families are being hammered into the ground. We have to fight this kind of ideology. We have to fight to feed our families electricity, fuel. We're fighting all the time.
Well,
families,
it's a good job. It's a good job. I have a very successful podcast then, isn't it?
Yeah, but we're tired, Greg. We're tired, and we're tired of the government, you know, being unkind to us and ignoring us. And, you know, Martin Luther King once said, silence sometimes is an act of betrayal. Our politicians are remaining silent on all these things.
Okay.
And it's not my opinion.
But it's
the party's opinion. And they are supporting a party that is making our lives as families very, very hard in this moment.
Are you not going to be proven right in that there's a pendulum swing here? Okay. So maybe the pendulum went in one direction. We've seen in the United States, we've seen in Britain, we've seen in Wales, actually, a big decision last week where all gender-affirming care was scrapped there. That, you know, we're a bit laggards, and in Western society, there is a little bit of a reset whereby things are coming back to a more centrist, conservative position. I'm not saying that's right or wrong. It's an observation. So we're seeing it in England, America, and elsewhere. And it's inevitable. Like the kickback in relation to this lactation expert, would this have happened 2 or 3 years ago? I don't know. So, you know, maybe we're at a.
Greg, look for the fuel crisis there at the moment, right? So our government, and I think it was very cynical of them, our government knew that the tax would come back in September and they had to recall the dial. Now, do you understand that the TDs in Donegal actually made a gain on that because they had to return to the dial? They got extra expenses. To call the dial for a day is about $300,000-$400,000 plus their travelling expenses, their overnight. So for them to continue to give us this reduction, they have actually personally gained financially on our struggles. I mean, this is what I'm trying to say. They're not listening. Again, Greg, just think of this. The tax increase per month for the first 6 months of this year is up $600 million per month on last year.
The tax take.
Do you know how much the fuel rebate that they're giving back is costing the Irish taxpayer? $100 million. Mm. The government is still $500 million up on last year every month. And they're making us feel that we have to work for this $100 million that they're giving us to reduce our fuel at the petrol pumps. They could reduce it another $100 million and they still would have 400 million surplus taxes from the working people of this country. They're making 600 million a month surplus tax this year on our work. And here they're spending our money on paying for a conference for a man to breastfeed. Okay. There's another one down in Cork now shortly on the 12th and 13th of September about transgender. It's been helped by TINE, the Transgender Equality Ireland. And the person, one of the organisers of the work, one of the workshops, Dara Dempsey, is saying, who's driving the plane? That's what he's asking in promotion of transgenderism. I'm asking, who's driving the plane for our taxes? Who's driving our plane when it comes to the ideology that men can breastfeed? Who's right? And it's certainly not.
It's possible, though. It is very possible that this was the actions of one over-enthusiastic, perhaps ill-informed booker, rather than someone tapping into some sort of a global agenda. But I take your point, Joe, and you've had a lot of time because we invited you to express that, and we'll see what people think. Thank you very much indeed. Look forward to it. By always enjoy having a Joe conversation with Joe. And by the way, don't presume my opinion from questioning. I'm here to try and get the best out of a guest and also to push back on certain points and see where we go to from there. That's the function of it. Otherwise, it's just a sermon. And I don't mean a sermon in a religious way referencing Joe. I mean generally across the board. 086 60 25,000. That tickets for that conference have been paused. The sales have been paused whilst they deal with that controversy. Right, my apologies. A little late with the bingo numbers. Here we go.
It's time for Vision Ireland Bingo on Highland Radio.
It's Monday the 31st of August. You're playing on the green sheet for the Dilly prize of €800. The reference number is S16. It's game number 36. The numbers are 45, 79, 51, 6, 67, 23, 19, 76, 62, and finally 81. Phone your claim to 910-4833 before midnight, leaving your name, contact number and the name of the shop where you purchased your book, and we'll call you back the next working day. Get all your Vision Ireland bingo information at highlandradio.com.
Mags from Cork saved big on her car insurance when she switched to OutSurance.
It's true. Insuring my Ford Puma with OutSurance saved me €220. And with the Out bonus, I'll get 10% of my insurance premiums back in cash after 3 years claims free.
For a competitive car insurance quote, call 1-800-600-400 or visit outsurance.ie. Real people, unreal savings. OutSurance. You always get something out. Based on a like-for-like policy comparison in January 2026 for a 63-year-old who received a gratuity for their participation. Outbonus calculated less taxes and levies across all policies. Acceptance criteria, terms and conditions apply. Outsurance stack trading as Outsurance is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
Are you worried about trees on your property? Northwest Forestry Services Ballybofey are fully insured and have over 40 years' experience in dangerous tree removal, tree felling, surgery and stump grinding. For peace of mind, call Northwest Forest Services Ballybofey for a no obligation quotation on 913-2033.
You do not want to miss the Autumn Cabaret at Harvey's Point every Wednesday from September the 23rd until October the 28th. A feast of stars including Robert Mizell, Ronan Collins, Patrick Feeney, Mary Byrne, Mike Denver, Jimmy Buckley, hosted by the great David James, with Harvey's Point Hospitality and Gourmet Food. To book, harveyspoint.com or 074 972 2208.
Well said, Dr. Joe. Shame on the teachers who remain silent on the kind of immorality that's being introduced to kids as a norm. Norma Foley is not fit for office. Could you let Dr. Joe voice his opinion? He's so interested and so right as an opinion. Listen, you see that, and it's actually often speakers from a political from a particular perspective that people have an issue with me asking questions. That's my job. That's part of it. That teases it out. Dr. Joe very much enjoys coming on the program. And actually, in terms of him getting his point across, I have a role to play in that, as I do with every guest. Okay. So as I say, there can be certain people of a certain, I don't know, that seem to be particularly edgy in relation to that. Thank God for Joe to highlight what's happening in our country is 100% right. What an insult to women, and especially to God who created the woman. Greg, this craziness is the result of the stuff being imposed in our schools. Parents should see the consent of the lessons first. So it's very early after that conversation. Lots of comments coming in. Greg, thank God for Dr. Joe. He makes sense. The country has gone mad. Joe is correct. This is the work of the evil one. I totally agree with Dr. Kelly. I've never heard or seen anything as ridiculous. The business of men chest feeding, which is a phrase I actually don't even like using, but anyway, the caller did. The business of men chest feeding is cruel to children. It's time enough people stood up to the ridiculous ideologies being imposed to the detriment of the future lives of our children. I mean, like, I don't know. You have to imagine if you were an adult. If you were an adult and you were told that a man in your life was chest feeding, and I'll use that phrase because they're not breasts. Like, I think for an adult being told that about their childhood, for many adults, that might seem as it might actually trigger some of the same reactions as abuse would. You know, I mean, if I was told now that you, by the way, your dad fed you in that way, my word, I don't know how I would deal with that. You know, and whilst we try and please the needs of adults, so they get gender euphoria or a sexual kick from it, the people you have to focus on, in my view, in that situation, is the kids that are being held there. And that they should be held and protected, not held and being subjected to something they don't have a say on and that might damage them later in life. I don't know. Let's see. Hi, Greg. This is just in relation to the street lighting in Bala Buffet. I know it's been raised before. However, these haven't been replaced or improved. Now that we're getting into the darker evenings and with a lot more rain visibility, it's poor when driving. Can this be raised again? Remind me, it's a while ago. What's going on with the street lighting, the lighting there again? Is it the nature of the bulbs, or I can't remember, are they too high? Remind me of what the situation is there, please, if you don't mind. On the issue of class sizes, that comment on big class sizes is from a vastly different era. One of our other listeners before 10 talked of being a class of 42 and it never did us any harm. Well, that comment on big classes is from a vastly different era, one in which compliance and fear was the order of the day. How many slipped through the net? The children who got on fine would have got on fine anywhere and in any class. The others with needs were overlooked. We all know these from our classes if we were in school in those days. Flawed and out-of-date statement. I remember, you know, with the best will in the world, I think in that situation too, what happens is the class room, the makeup of that classroom sort of starts looking like clever ones at the front, difficult ones at the back, and in a class of 42. And in that class of 42, maybe 10, 12 went on to be super professionals, and maybe the back row dropped out at 13, 14, 15, or 15, 16, 17. Hedge cutting. Hopefully now is the start of hedge cutting season starts tomorrow. Landowners, private owners, etc. need to get roads done as the countryside is closed in and dangerous. Hedge cutting, I think, I think I'm starting to learn that it's far more controversial and far more problematic than, oh, it's hedge cutting season, let's cut all the hedges. That there is disputes, there's right of ways, there's next door neighbours who've fallen out with each other and don't want to make their neighbours' lives any easier. Accusations of, you cut my hedge, you didn't have permission. I think there's a lot of that going on, and I think that's actually quite problematic. Maybe some of you have an insight into that, I don't know. Welcome into studio Laura Kelly from Draperstown in Derry. Good morning to you.
Morning, Greg.
Thank you so much for calling down to us. Now, you've been speaking publicly about your condition CMN, and I'm going to hand it over to you to break down the CNM for me. It's a very rare genetic condition that you have, Laura.
It is, yes. It's congenital melanocytic nevi, and it's just large birthmarks covering 98% of my body.
Now, were you born with these?
I was born, yeah.
So, and in terms of what it is, like what is happening in your system, or what happened in your gestation that creates CMN?
So in the womb, It was just a genetic mutation. It was random, spontaneous, and that's it. It could affect anyone. It was nothing to do with my parents. It's not inherited. Nothing like that.
Oh, I wasn't trying to blame
anyone. Random, you know.
And Laura, I think a lot of people, when we talk of birthmarks, they might think of like a strawberry birthmark or something along those lines. But this was of the severity whereby there was concerns about how long you might even live for.
Yes, there was. My parents were told that I probably wouldn't live past the age of 8. I suppose back then there wasn't enough awareness of it, so nobody was really educated on the condition. And then I went to Great Ormond Street Hospital in London, and I suppose there was more research over there at the time, so everybody came to know it was birthmarks.
Now, you also had to have 14 operations as well. What was the reason for that?
So it was 14 operations in the first year of my life. It was like skin graft, scraping away at the birthmarks. So right now they're a brown colour, but if those operations weren't done back then, they would nearly be black, like a really dark colour. Mm. But that's all it was. It was really just to improve the appearance of them back then.
So, I mean, obviously, the priority when you're very young is to ensure that you live, right?
Yes.
And defy those medical odds, and thank God that you have and gone on to have your own child or children.
I have a 3-year-old,
Right? So, thank God you beat those odds. But then, of course, you come into a stage of life where you have some self-awareness or you look at other kids and maybe you don't have the same. How was that for you? And at what age, if at all, did it become sort of problematic for you?
Oh, well, from when I was a child growing up, I never felt any different to any other child or my siblings. And that was all down to my parents. They raised me to be resilient. They didn't bubble wrap me. I was exposed to everything else like any other child. And then, naturally enough, when I hit the teenage years, I'm more aware of how I look and I'm different to everyone else. But growing up in a small town, having my friends all through my school years, the same friends, they became protective of me as well. Growing up, going to school, I was treated the same. So,
and to some extent, did you embrace it? In other words, look, this is me. I'm different, but this is who I am.
I did. You know, I would have went to school maybe up to third or fourth year and wore no makeup, and then you wouldn't have got me going to school with no makeup on. But I still, like, if anybody asked me what it was, I'll just explain it. That's it. Mm. There's nothing else you can do. Nobody's born to know what every condition is.
Yeah, exactly. And understanding that there's going to be curiosity.
Exactly, yeah.
I get you. That's a really good point, actually. Mm-hmm. And just have the, well, this is it. This is who I am. In terms of, I mean, obviously, you know, again, people listening might focus on, you know, what's the visuals of this. But there's a practicality here in terms of skin, sun damage, etc.
Oh, yes.
Caring for your skin. So this is ongoing. So in other words, if you don't protect your skin, if you don't treat your skin, I presume there can be agitation or you could be more vulnerable to UV rays. Is that the case?
Yeah, I would have medically approved body wash and creams that I do every day. I'm up 2 hours in the morning before I had to go somewhere to put it all on. But also when it comes to the sun, I'm not allowed any exposure to the sun. So I'd wear factor 50. Mm. And so, yeah. When we go on holidays, that's factor 50, and I'll just wear a fake tan.
You talk
fake it till you make it.
You know what? Why not? Because we were talking earlier on about the calls for an all-out ban on sunbeds, so you're ahead of the curve here.
Yeah.
You know? Do they develop? In other words, are you maintaining sort of this is your skin now, or do you have to go through any further operations, or what's the story with your life now?
So, we're never going to be able to remove them. So any operations is just to improve the appearance. And I actually had my last
That's my question. So in other words, if you have procedures, it's to improve appearance. It's not to mitigate risk is really what I was asking.
Yeah, that's it. Okay. And my last one was back in March there. It was like they scraped away at a few of the spots on my face. And it did improve, but it left it red with a scar. So there's
and you
not
go,
much difference.
Is it worth it?
Yeah,
I guess. Exactly. You. What does your son call your birthmarks?
Beauty spots. Freddie calls my beauty spots, yeah.
Absolutely. Love it. When speaking publicly about it, obviously it's good, it's great, but do you hope sort of maybe that it reaches other people that might not have the exact mindset that you have, or do you think it's we should sort of normalize that, you know, maybe someone might appear different? So what do you hope to achieve from speaking publicly?
Raising awareness for CMN itself, yeah. Also for myself, you know, if you see me, everybody always knows my face, they're like, oh, I know that face, and people that don't know me, if you see me with no makeup on or my legs out, you know what's wrong with me. You know, it's just birthmarks. That's all it is. Mm. And it's for other people as well, with similar skin conditions, that, you know what, just embrace it, because there's worse things going on in the world.
Yeah. Right now. Oh, there really is. And it's a fantastic attitude. But do you know the funny thing about us and life is that you might have, I'll just use a girl for an example. You might have a girl with a blemish on her face. Mm-hmm. And that's it. And she might be far more worried or anxious about that than you are having 98% coverage of birthmarks. It's just, we're so different as humans. But the hope is that maybe that helps contextualize for that person.
Yeah, like sometimes my friends, for example, would be like that. If they had a spot and they're like, oh, I don't want to go out of this big spot on my face. And then they would apologise to
me,
actually.
Because
I'm like, what do you mean you have a spot in your face? But no.
I think that's a sign of your true friendship, isn't it?
Really? Yeah, it is. But no, I know I have this attitude, a positive attitude and all, but it gets me down sometimes. Like sometimes I just wish I could get up in the morning.
Yeah.
Get up. Wash and leave without having to cover myself.
And, yeah, you know. I get you. And as you said a little earlier on, and you just said it as in a throwaway statement, but it's not. It's the prep, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's an extra layer of everything time-wise in your life before you do anything relatively. Yeah. Going to the shops, dropping the wee boy to school when that time
exactly,
comes.
Exactly, yeah. I have the full face of makeup on, yeah.
Online, do you do much online?
Just since I've started sharing my story, I would never really have put anything out there. And then when the charity asked me to share my story, I got such good feedback from everyone. And like, I knew that people know that I look like this, like in my hometown, but I don't know why I still hid it. And then whenever I shared my story, people came forward and it's like, we know that, like, it was just really good, really positive feedback from them. So I've probably posted a bit more on social media now since that. But yeah, I don't get time either working.
No, and being a mom as well too. And you've a wedding coming up.
I do next
year. Okay,
yeah.
So you're busy enough it is. And I think really to social media, the type of thing now is you almost have to commit to it. And it's actually a lifestyle change as well as that. So let's talk about your awareness of CMN. How rare is it? Because the problem with very rare conditions or whatever category it falls into, not yours but other conditions, is the rarer it is, the more difficult it is to make any advancements, if you know what I mean. So what is the current focus of the CMN charity that you're working with? That what do they want to see happen? Or what do you want to see happen, for that matter?
So there is Professor Veronica Kinsler is actually working on, I don't know if it's his cure as such, like for me right now, you'll never be able to remove it, but they are working on one that can work in the womb. So they can like reverse that gene.
Okay.
In the womb, so the baby is born without birthmarks.
Yeah.
Now, there's really good progress at the minute on it. And if you looked up on the website Caring Matters Now, they have all the information that you'd need on it. It's really interesting, actually.
Yeah, okay. And do we know how frequent someone is born with CMN?
It's 1 in 10 to 20,000 babies.
So it is really, it's I wouldn't say it's common, but it's not as rare as one might think.
Yeah, and so far the charity has been able to tell me that I'm the oldest in Northern Ireland now with CMN, of who they're aware of with it. So yeah.
And it's one of those things too, Laura, and it's wonderful that you're in the position that you are now, but I just wonder too, there's going to be others who, do we see them? So I say, oh, right, so it's 1 in 10 or 1 in 20,000. Why have I never met anyone else with CMN? Is it because they're living a solitude life or they feel that if they stepped out of the house, blah, blah, blah? Do you know what I mean? I wonder if, and maybe they're even listening to us now, that they don't want to go out for whatever reason.
I wonder that as well, actually. Yeah, I've never seen another person that
exactly,
looks like me.
Yeah,
never. Although, like, I've heard of a lot of other cities of charity in the UK and England and wherever. But in like, I have never, another person to say amen has never stood in front of me. Yeah. So, yeah, no.
But they're there, so are they living their lives in a different way? But then you talked about how, you talked maybe there is a high level of young mortality. I don't have the statistics. Why did you defy the odds? I mean, do we know why medical professionals thought that you would not live beyond 8, but you did and are healthy?
Yeah, I'm actually unsure, but like I said before, I think it's down to education. I just don't think there was enough.
This is why I'm a doctor's nightmare, because I ask these crazy questions. Why?
It is a good question, though, but no, I actually couldn't answer that.
Okay, brilliant stuff. Yeah. Right, if people want more information on it, because you don't have to be directly affected by it, I think any level of sort of support or encouragement for the charity, even sharing their links if you can't help fund the research, whatever anyone can do, it all helps. And we are a community, and, you know, we don't have to be directly affected by something, I don't think, to do something positive in that regard. It's check out CMN.
Yeah.
Right. So the condition is called congenital
melanocytic.
But they've changed the CMN to...
It is CMN, so it's congenital melanocytic nevi.
But the charity's called...
But the charity's Caring Matters Now.
Which I think is lovely.
Yeah, right? Isn't it?
Because it uses the CMN, but it's got a message and it's easier for people who aren't familiar with it to pronounce. Anything else you want to add, Laura?
No, I think I've covered everything.
All right, well, good luck with the wedding.
Thank you very much.
Freddie in school next year?
Freddie started nursery this week, so he'll be P1 next year.
How was he?
Oh, he was great.
How were you?
Yeah, well, that
Any
was another
tears
story.
At the door?
Nearly.
No, it's us, really, isn't it? It's not the kids. They
it
don't
is,
mind.
Yeah,
it's us. Okay. Brilliant, Laura. Thank you so much for calling down. I really do appreciate it. Yeah. And fair play for getting awareness out there for CMN Charity, of course, or the CMN organisation, but also too for other people who think maybe the world cares more than it does. You know, we're very focused on ourselves, and, you know, not everyone is looking to pick holes in your left, right and centre either. You'll always get a few, but the reality is people just generally accept you for who you are, I think, anyway. Laura Kelly, thank you very much indeed. I want to go now to PJ. Good morning, PJ.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I am doing good. Now, you're raising really quite an important issue here, and that is stop signs on quite an important junction. Talk to us about the lay of the land at the moment.
The lay of the land is anybody that drives from Milford to Letterkenny up using the Mound Hill Road that takes you out at Illiston. The first junction is at Drummond School, but there's another crossroad just a little bit towards Cars of the Diamond, and it's a crossroads, and there's been an awful lot of accidents on it. But the council have put stop signs on the four roads now, and I just want to draw attention to drivers that would use that road. Now, I don't know if the council have put in the local papers or have they been in contact with Highland Radio, but I just want to let people know about it, because I used the road this morning, and I know three cars going straight through the stop signs, and maybe they weren't aware of it.
Well,
but
I'm
the
looking
roads
at, I'm
are
looking
marked
at,
as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm looking at the pictures here, and often I say, you know, you need to make drivers more aware, blah, blah, blah. But these are two big stop signs with stop written on the road as well. There's no excuse not to see that unless you're not watching at all.
Yeah, well, even further back, there's noses to slow. And there's also another, the shape of a stop sign to tell you there's a stop sign ahead. But unfortunately, there's a lot of people that don't seem to either see them or don't want to pay attention to them and drive straight through them, you know. Now, that crossroads has been notorious for accidents. And it's only by the luck of God that nobody has been killed at it.
Yeah, exactly. So it might take, now we might not have time, people need to be careful, it might take time for people to become aware, but you're saying if you're on this crossroads, it's between Drummond Crossroads and the Diamond Crossroads on the Lister into Milford Road.
And Cars of the Diamond here.
So heed, are we saying heed the stop signs? That's the key thing. Other than that, it's a good news story, isn't it? Just people need to look at the stop signs.
Yeah, they say a lot of locals know how dangerous the crossroads is. And myself, I would, even before the stop signs went on, a lot of the locals are the same. They would slow it down to nearly a stop anyway. Because I had two near shaves on them myself, so I had. So a lot of people, a lot of the locals now all slow down anyway and would more or less come to a stop. But it's just people that would be, say, using coming from Milford, go to Letterkenny or vice versa.
Let me ask you, sorry, PJ, was it always a case that, did any of the roads have right-of-way previously? Because there seems to be stop signs on all four of these. So have they changed?
The Milford or the Minehill to Ellison Road always had the right-of-way.
Okay, but that's not the case anymore.
Not since Friday.
Yeah. So if there's four cars at the stop sign, who moves first? How does that work?
Well, I don't know how it goes, but at least somebody can, you know, four stopped, somebody can wave somebody. But
I know what you mean. Yeah. I've never seen a junction with traffic on all four roads being told to stop. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm thinking, I'm sitting here, I'm going, okay. I don't know. Maybe it needs a roundabout now.
Well, Kerry Keel is the first one I've seen. The four roads in Kerry Keel,
right,
have all stop signs on them.
All right. Either way, stop. And what we have to say too, this is the law. When there is a stop sign, you have to stop because you'd fail your test, for an example, if you didn't. Okay, PJ, thank you very much indeed for that. That's PJ Burke. So if four of us are stopped at that junction, who goes where? I should know, shouldn't I? But there's no point pretending. Right, we were talking about sunbeds. We have this voice note. So let's hear what they have to say.
Hi, Greg. Just in relation to the proposal to ban sunbeds, which cause 5% of all cancers, does that mean then that the state will also ban cigarettes, which cause more than 50% of cancers? I'm pretty sure that the cost of that is way, way higher than the cost to the state by sunbeds.
Yeah, it's a good point. They're looking for a generational ban on cigarettes, but maybe they're not prepared to give up the tax yet on cigarettes. Good point. It does make sense. If your argument is about saving or trying to reduce the 5% of cancers, well, then go for the biggie, don't you? 086 60 25,000. And if it suits you, by the way, voice notes, we love them because we can just play them out and it means you don't have to type. And for some people, and this is why we use voice notes, and the reason we do a lot of things on this show is to try and make it as inclusive as is possible. Some people, you know, struggle with reading and writing. That is a fact. And I know some people very close to me that's the case. Voice notes means you get to have your say. So, you know, just send us a voice note in and you get to have your say too. And that's why we stream online at the moment. We're having a bit of problems with Facebook. We'll get that sorted. But if you've got someone in your life that are hearing impaired now or lost their hearing and you want them to feel connected to what's going on, stick YouTube on the telly and the subtitles there. They're 99% perfect, and it means that you can follow a chat show, whatever's happening in the region, even if you can't hear. And that's why we started doing the streaming as well. One thing I will notice, and I noticed an awful lot of... I haven't noticed an awful lot. I've noticed some public representatives now are doing posters up on issues, which is fine. They're doing posters up on issues, and obviously some of them are using AI. And as I say, that's fine if you want to do it, but please also put the text in the post as well, because some of the readers, for people who are visually impaired, some of the readers can't read the posters. So the posters are great, but if you're going to do that, please also paste in the text in the post as well so that everyone can see it. And that's where we leave it on the show today. We're back with you tomorrow morning at 9 a.m.